Welcome to the audio digest of the American Journal of Psychiatry. This is Dr. Susan Schultz with highlights for December 2014. They include a discussion of mercury poisoning and its neuropsychiatric presentations. We'll also present a large study that used a new approach to testing the effect of antidepressants on heart rate. Several articles are about biomarkers of psychiatric illness. One study identified a combined epigenetic and genetic biomarker for suicide. Another found that a measure of inflammation in depressed patients predicted the outcome of treatment with escitalopram and nortriptyline. A commentary on biomarkers considers how biological tests can be incorporated into psychiatric diagnostic criteria. The article on a biomarker for suicide has been selected as meriting CME for readers who subscribe to the AJP CME course program. Each month, brief companion exams are created for three articles from the issue. By reading the articles and completing the online exam, individuals can earn up to one AMA PRA Category 1 credit per article. This activity is sponsored by the American Psychiatric Association. To subscribe, click on the CME link at the top of our homepage, ajp.psychiatryonline.org. We'll start the December highlights with our clinical case conference about mercury poisoning. The case described by Shui-Bing Huang and colleagues was ultimately attributed to mercury contained in the patient's Chinese herbal medication, but mercury poisoning comes from a variety of sources. Psychiatrists don't see many cases of it, and the neuropsychiatric symptoms can be easily confused with general neurotic or somatization problems. The case described in this report was initially diagnosed as pain somatoform disorder. The clinical effects of mercury poisoning depend on the form of mercury involved, the route and duration of exposure, and individual factors. In the case presented, the mercury was an inorganic salt, calomel, which was an additive in the patient's herbal remedy. Inorganic mercury generally affects the renal and gastrointestinal systems, but symptoms can vary. This patient had renal and peripheral nervous system symptoms in the early phase, but over time, the mercury underwent methylation by intestinal microorganisms, producing methylmercury, which caused CNS effects. Clinicians need to be aware of the many systems mercury can affect. Inorganic mercury is also found in cinnabar, another medicinal additive, and in some disinfectants and preservatives. Organic mercury is present in predator fish high up in the aquatic food chain and in thimerosal, a preservative in vaccines. Organic mercury largely harms the peripheral nervous system and CNS as it readily crosses the blood-brain barrier. Elemental mercury is part of fossil fuel emissions, thermometers, fluorescent lights, and dental amalgams. It mostly damages the pulmonary, dermatological, and peripheral and central nervous systems. The U.S. and other countries have taken notable steps to lower mercury levels in several of these sources. The neuropsychiatric symptoms of mercury poisoning include insomnia, excessive dreaming, fatigue, weakness, memory loss, and irritability. Early neurological symptoms are also diverse and nonspecific. Typically, they involve sensory and fine motor disturbances. Further progression will feature anxiety, depression, excitability, personality changes, delirium, hallucinations, and seizures. The first step in treatment is to stop the exposure while beginning supportive measures. These include hydration, balancing electrolytes, oxygen therapy, hemodialysis, and blood transfusion. The second step is mercury removal, mainly through chelation. In traditional Chinese, Tibetan, and Ayurvedic medicine, It's common to add mercury minerals such as cinnabar and calomel to herbal remedies for psoriasis, eczema, and dermatitis, and for detoxification. The Chinese pharmacopoeia describes mercury as a toxic compound with topical medicinal utility, but not typically ingested as a decoction and not used for long. In 69 reported cases of mercury poisoning caused by Chinese herbal medications in China, the vast majority were attributed to inappropriate addition of calomel to treat psoriasis, sexually transmitted diseases, arthritis, and other disorders. This caused neurological, hepatic, and renal damage. Some Brazilian herbal folk medicines also have a high mercury content. Mercury contamination in these herbal medicines may come from all points of production, from polluted soil or irrigation to mercury-based fertilizers, pesticides, and preservatives. Now we'll turn to the possible biomarker of suicide and suicidal behaviors. Suicide vulnerability may be due to epigenetic alterations in molecular pathways that are important for hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis function. The cortisol stress response has been identified as one of the most promising candidate suicide endophenotypes. It's been proposed that dual risks are involved, that the underlying biological state moderates an aberrant response to stress. Identifying the genetic and epigenetic factors underlying vulnerability to suicidal behaviors in the context of stressors is needed to maximize suicide prevention efforts. Jerry Gintivano and colleagues used genome-wide screening to identify novel epigenetic associations in postmortem brain tissue of suicide decedents. They also evaluated the degree to which the identified loci were present in peripheral blood samples of living subjects and the efficacy of these sites as biomarkers in the context of stress and anxiety. Genome-wide DNA methylation was profiled in postmortem prefrontal cortical tissue from individuals with major depression, some of whom died by suicide. Replication was carried out in a similar group. Methylation was examined in neuronal and glial nuclei. Only one gene, SKA2, often pronounced SKA2, exhibited nominal significance in the neuronal and glial fractions of both the discovery and replication sets. The methylation scan identified an additive epigenetic and genetic association with suicide at a single nucleotide polymorphism, or SNP, within the 3' untranslated region of the gene. The finding was replicated in two independent cohorts of postmortem prefrontal cortical samples. Expression of the SKA2 gene was significantly lower in the subjects who had died by suicide, and gene expression was associated with genetic and epigenetic variation of the identified SNP. Similar results were found in living subjects. Peripheral blood was obtained from 3 studies of participants who consented to blood drawing for future research. They were also rated for suicidal ideation. Across all cohorts, significant elevations of DNA methylation of the identified SNP were observed. One of the cohorts was a group of pregnant women who provided blood samples months before suicidal ideation was measured. The significance of the findings in this group suggests that the variation in SKA2 DNA methylation preceded the transition to suicidal ideation. Data derived from the brain and blood samples provided evidence that peripheral epigenetic variation is a marker of primarily neuronal processes. One of the living cohorts also provided saliva samples for measurement of cortisol. The cortisol level upon awakening was significantly associated with suicidal ideation, but cortisol measured 30 or 60 minutes later was not. and waking cortisol was also significantly related to epigenetic variation in the identified SNP. Scores for perceived stress and for anxiety were available for the prospective cohort of pregnant women. Stress and anxiety each had a significant interaction with SNP genotype and DNA methylation in predicting suicidal ideation. The association was replicated in another live cohort in which anxiety interacted with epigenetic and genetic SNP status to moderate suicide attempt but not suicidal ideation. In a third cohort, the anxiety interaction model was associated with suicidal ideation, and the relationship became even stronger in the subset with suicide attempts. Cumulatively, the data suggests that epigenetic variation at the SCA2 gene could increase risk for suicidal ideation, and that among individuals with suicidal ideation also experiencing anxiety or stress, a suicide attempt is more likely. Our next biomarker article is about prediction of antidepressant response. Many individuals with major depression have an inadequate response to treatment. Several lines of evidence implicate immunity and inflammation in the pathogenesis of depression and in the mechanisms of antidepressant response. Norepinephrine and serotonin have different effects on inflammation, suggesting that inflammatory biomarkers may differentially predict the outcome of treatment with antidepressants that affect the levels of these neuromediators. Rudolf Uher and colleagues checked out this idea using C-reactive protein, or CRP, as a measure of inflammation. The data were from an open-label randomized clinical trial carried out at 9 European academic psychiatry centers. Baseline serum levels of CRP were available for more than 200 patients. They were randomly allocated to receive escitalopram or nortriptyline for 12 weeks. Escitalopram is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor that has no effect on norepinephrine transport. Final dosages ranged from 5 to 30 milligrams a day, with a mean of 17. Nortriptyline is a tricyclic antidepressant that's considered primarily a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. It was chosen over a more selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor because of its superior efficacy record. The final dosage ranged from 50 to 200 milligrams a day, with a mean of 106. Completion rates were higher for escitalopram than for nortriptyline, but the two treatments showed comparable efficacy in reducing depressive symptoms. The primary outcome measure was the total score on the Montgomery-Åsberg Depression Scale. Secondary outcome measures included the Hamilton Rating Scale for Depression, Beck Depression Inventory, and symptom dimensions derived from factor analysis, observed mood, cognitive symptoms, and neurovegetative symptoms. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the American Heart Association group CRP levels according to cardiovascular risk and level of systemic inflammation. The patients in this study were categorized on this basis as having low, average, high, or acute inflammation. A low inflammation level was defined as a CRP measurement less than 1 milligram per liter. About half of the patients had low CRP levels, and another quarter had average levels. At low CRP levels, escitalopram was more effective than nortriptyline, leading to 3 more points of improvement on the Montgomery-Åsberg Depression Rating Scale. At moderate to high CRP levels, nortriptyline was superior by a comparable amount. The effects were similar with scores on the Hamilton Depression Scale and were even stronger with scores on the self-reported Beck Depression Inventory. In addition, the interaction between antidepressant drug and baseline CRP level affected all 3 symptom dimensions: mood, cognition, and neurovegetative symptoms. Analyses also indicated an additive effect of symptoms and CRP level. The score for the item measuring interest and activity did not correlate strongly with CRP level, but jointly they explained about 16% of the variance in the Montgomery-Åsberg depression score. Kenneth Kendler comments on how laboratory or biological tests can be incorporated into psychiatric diagnosis. He chaired the Scientific Review Committee for DSM-5, so he was exposed to the questions and controversies that arose during its development. Based on that experience, he reviews three issues that may confront psychiatric nosology as it moves forward. First, it isn't clear how to move from a descriptive to an etiologically based nosology. One option is to await dramatic research breakthroughs in imaging or genetics that will permit a revolutionary change. That would enable psychiatry to shift in one fell swoop from signs and symptoms to key DNA variants, imaging findings, or neurochemical markers that would define disorders etiologically. However, the accumulating evidence suggests that there won't be one big discovery of the etiology of psychiatric disorders. Rather, for most if not all of these disorders, there will be a series of small discoveries of important parts of complex multifactorial puzzles. A more evolutionary approach to nosology would be to add specific laboratory or biological tests to the existing criteria. Individual findings from different research levels can be considered pragmatically. They just have to help improve the performance of psychiatric diagnoses. This process has already started. In DSM-5, criterion B2 for narcolepsy is reduced levels of CSF hypocretin, and criterion B3 involves specific findings from nocturnal sleep polysomnography. There will be concerns about specificity, as a number of genetic and neurobiological markers for psychiatric disorders appear to have an impact on risk for several psychiatric disorders. But we have already confronted this problem at a symptom level. On its own, insomnia is nonspecific, but when it occurs with sad mood, reduced appetite, and guilt, it has proven to be a useful marker for depressive illness. Finally, diagnostic approaches that utilize a combination of historical information, symptoms, signs, and laboratory tests of different kinds are common across the rest of medicine. If firmly based in empirical findings, they can be used in psychiatry. The second issue addressed by Dr. Kendler is the reification problem. The current DSM diagnostic criteria have been selected because they usefully index psychiatric disorders. However, in many ways, psychiatrists act as if the DSM criteria constitute our disorders. Residents are taught to focus evaluations largely or solely on assessment of DSM criteria. Clinical and research-structured interviews assess only DSM criteria, and treatment algorithms utilize DSM categories evaluated by DSM criteria. Trainees should be reminded that DSM criteria are a good place to start for a diagnostic evaluation, but that examining only these symptoms and signs would lead to an impoverished view of psychopathology. In clinical work, psychiatrists should remember to explore the diversity of patients' pathological experiences. The DSM criteria are only a good jumping-off point, and researchers should sample beyond the DSM criteria to capture more of the wide domains of symptomatology for the disorders being examined. Dr. Kendler's third point is that psychiatry needs to further ponder what might be called the Box Canyon problem in psychiatric nosology. An evolutionary approach to nosology has a good chance of working if the current criteria are in the right ballpark. But what if they are not? What if they're so deeply flawed that small improvements can't fix the problem? That is, they're stuck in a box canyon with no easy way out. In this case, real improvement of the criteria would require a deeper, more revolutionary change, a reboot. Some might advocate that such a change be launched by conceptual analysis based on consensus, that is, thinking our way out of the box canyon, but moving toward a more empirically grounded nosological system challenges researchers and clinicians to develop alternative formulations of their diagnoses. These may differ radically from the DSM system. However, the empirical superiority of these alternatives to the boxed-in DSM system would need to be shown before advocacy begins for a wholesale transformation of the criteria. Next, we'll look at effects on the parasympathetic nervous system of depression, anxiety, and antidepressants. Findings on patients' heart rate and its variability have been contradictory, and so Andrew Kemp and colleagues studied a large cohort of adults by using a relatively new analytic method, propensity score weighting. It controls for numerous potential confounders. The participants were recruited for the Brazilian Longitudinal Study of Adult Health, a large, multicenter cohort study. The cohort comprised more than 15,000 adults. The evaluations included interviews, clinical examinations, collection of blood and urine samples, and a comprehensive set of examinations and measurements, including electrocardiogram at rest. Mental disorders were ascertained by using the Clinical Interview Schedule Revised, a structured interview used for diagnosing common non-psychotic psychiatric conditions in the community. The ICD-10 categories evaluated were depression, agoraphobia, social phobia, specific phobia, generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and social anxiety disorder. For comparisons, the phobias were grouped together, and social anxiety disorder was included in the broader category of any anxiety disorder. A comorbid group, including both depression and any anxiety disorder, was also analyzed. After propensity score weighting, there were no significant differences in heart rate between comparison participants and any of the diagnostic groups. Analysis of heart rate variability revealed significant effects for only one group. Variability was lower in participants with generalized anxiety disorder than in the comparison group. Participants taking antidepressants were analyzed as an overall group and by drug category. Relative to participants not taking antidepressants, average heart rate was higher in those on tricyclics, those on serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, SNRIs, and those on uncategorized antidepressants. The rate for the tricyclic group was about 74 beats a minute, compared with about 67 for those not taking antidepressants. The heart rate was slightly lower among those on selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. All antidepressants were associated with lower heart rate variability relative to participants not on antidepressants. Increases in resting heart rate and decreases in its variability are associated with substantial morbidity and mortality, and the effects of antidepressants in this cohort were moderate to large. Generalized anxiety disorder was the only diagnostic category significantly related to a reduction in vagal activity, and the effect sizes were small. This concludes our audio highlights of the December issue of the American Journal of Psychiatry. Please visit our website, ajp.psychiatryonline.org, for the complete versions of these and other articles, including author affiliations and financial disclosures. We also welcome comments. They can be emailed to ajp@psych.org. Next month, our topics will include the relation of socioeconomic disadvantage to the outcome of collaborative depression care in an OB-GYN clinic, a comparison of ECT and pharmacotherapy for treatment-resistant bipolar depression, the impact of early intervention on externalizing psychopathology at age 25, and a weight loss and lifestyle intervention for individuals taking antipsychotics. We hope you'll join us. Thank you for listening.